tour had ended and we had seen all of the artifacts and pieces of art that the exhibit had to offer, we asked Kelly Tialiu what she hopes audiences are able to take away from this exhibition, Parallax.
That's an excellent question. I mean, I think there are many sort of possibilities for different audiences to take away something that is of interest to them. I think for settlers, there is a lot of history that is quite nuanced. Often the history of border demarcation in the 19th century originally is seen as a kind of two-sided story, with the UK and the US coming together to embark on this settler project, and the Indigenous voices are often left out of sort of grand historical narrative. And so the exhibition is really an effort to pluralize that history and to really emphasize the multitude of ways in which border demarcation disrupted Indigenous territories, lifeways, cultural and spiritual and linguistic practices. So that would be kind of the main important takeaway. But also, you know, as Sandra mentioned at the beginning, it's an exhibition that brings together historic material, photographs and watercolors and maps, along with contemporary work in a wide range of mediums. And so depending on different visitors' interests, there really is something for everyone. Indigenous technology is featured quite heavily, and the materials and practices that go along with that. There are elements of sculpture, there are elements of photography. There's a documentary that is quite long and so we didn't quite get time to spend with. There are kind of more embodied kind of works that invite exploration. So we hope that, you know, different visitors with different interests will find something to engage with.
Parallax, Perspectives on the Canada-US Border, will be available for audiences until May 30th, 2026 at the Reach Gallery Museum in Abbotsford, BC. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, you are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Speak Up, which is also only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This has been your host, Danny Nesvedarani, for the hour. We listened to a couple of segments and interviews that I have produced, but we are going to be moving on to Nanaimo, BC. This is a piece that comes out of CHLY-FM from their community journalist, Lauren McKenzie, on a new Vancouver Island University career closet that is offering free professional clothing for students.
This is a CHY News update. A new service through Vancouver Island University's Career Studio is helping students dress for success for interviews, events, and presentations. University can be a busy time as students prepare to enter the workforce, and the Career Closet is helping students worry about one last thing. Whether it's for a work experience interview or networking at a career fair, VIU students can access free, gently used professional attire that'll help them look and feel their best. The idea for the closet came from a former Master's of Business Administration student who interned at the Career Studio and saw a large number of students struggling to find affordable professional attire. Peggy Jensen then stepped into a role of a career peer at the Career Studio and focused on bringing the idea of the closet to life. As an MBA student herself, Jensen says that she understands the importance of first impressions.
Building your personal brand is a very important topic. And it's not only about how you show up on social media like LinkedIn or Instagram, but it's basically how you show up with every single interview, with every single opportunity that you have to build relationships.
The Career Closet features various styles and fits of blazers, suits, and dress shirts, skirts, dress pants, and dresses, as well as shoes, accessories, and personal care kits. The clothing isn't just for loan. Students can pick up to one full outfit per visit and keep it.
It's expensive. If you're going to go and have a look and buy a new blazer jacket, it well, people charge like 150, 200 bucks. I mean, that's a lot of money. And the donations we're getting, they are very high quality, which is really nice. So, yeah, I've seen students come in, and then they put on a really nice jacket, and you just see the smile on their face, and it's like, hey, this looks really nice. It feels really good. So that's I think that's the most important reason why we do it.
Kirsten Tamoru, a fourth-year kinesiology student, use the career closet to find an outfit for an important interview for an internship.
Again, like, I'm pretty thrifty, and, you know, as all students are, kind of on a strict budget, that wasn't top of the priority for me. So learning about the career closet and how they're basically bypassing that problem of having to shell out money and build your own wardrobe from your own pocket, I really like that. You could come in and basically do shopping, grab anything you need, and you didn't have to pay a cent.
Tamoru says that because of the career closet, she felt more confident for her internship interview.
I always come to my interviews feeling prepared and my best, but now I also get the opportunity to look my best without spending my own money, which is pretty neat. Yeah.
Tamoru says she's now celebrating receiving the internship and is excited to start it in the spring. Danielle Johns-Rude, director for the Center of Experimental Learning and Student Engagement, oversees a career studio. She told CHY that all the clothes in the career closet are donations from the broader community, as well as VIU staff, faculty, and students.
We've seen involvement from the Nanaimo Chamber of Commerce and other organizations in town that are actually collecting donations for us. And I just, again, it speaks to, you know, as a university, we're part of a community, and the community supporting our students transitioning into the workplace. And I think that is wonderful because we exist here to support our local economy and to support our local needs on the island.
Clothing donations can be dropped off at Building 255 at the Nanaimo campus of Vancouver Island University, or by emailing careerstudio@viu.ca to arrange a drop-off. Johns-Rude says that in addition to clothing donations, they also accept monetary donations to purchase items, ensuring all sizes and styles are represented in the closet. She says the closet was first established with seed money from the VIU Foundation Access Fund. As part of Giving Tuesday on December 2nd of this year, the VIU Foundation is raising funds to support the Career Closet and the Career Studio's other work.
So every dollar is matched dollar for dollar up to $1,000. We have something called the Career Studio Fund. And so monies that want to be donated directly to the closet can go through the Career Studio Fund, and we would use it to add items into the closet, new items, as well as the personal care or confidence kits that Peggy calls them, into that space. In addition to other things that we operate at the Career Studios.
Monetary donations for Giving Tuesday can be made at giving.viu.ca/giving-tuesday. Students can book an appointment for the Career Closet online through the Student Employment Experience Hub. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thank you to CHLY and Laura McKenzie for that really cool piece coming out of Nanaimo, BC. Coming up next, and possibly last, is an interview that I did about a month ago with one of the founders of a recently opened publication here within the region, Burnaby, New Westminster, the Tri-Cities, Freshet News. And for those of you who are kind of tapped into local news, which you should be, back in April, three Glacier Media publications, the Burnaby Now, the New Westminster Record, and the Tri-City News all shut down, and a lot of journalists who were doing a really amazing job of providing local coverage of things like, you know, high school current affairs, as well as city council current affairs, as well as just any sort of community group doing something really cool and valuable, that all got shut down. And even though CJSF, we have been so fortunate to be able to produce a lot of news content for all of you, you can only do so much as a single organization, and that is why more news diversity is needed. And thankfully, Fresher News is helping to fill that gap. So I was able to interview Cornelia Naylor, a veteran journalist in the area and one of the founders of Fresher News. So without further ado, here is that interview. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. In late April of this year, Lodestar Media, formerly known as Glacier Media, closed down three of its news publications, The Burnaby Now, The New Westminster Record, and The Tri-City News. The main reason given for the closures were budget constraints. But these closures also drastically decreased the level of local news available in the municipalities of Burnaby, New Westminster, Port Coquitlam, Coquitlam, and Port Moody. In June of this year, four journalists who previously worked with the closed Lodestar Media publications banded together to start the Save Our Local News campaign. The campaign was created in collaboration with Media Workers Union Unifor, and after raising $55,000, a new publication, founded by veteran local journalists Mario Battelle, Janice Clue, Cornelia Naylor, and Teresa McManus, has finally launched. The publication is named Freshet News, and it serves to provide local news coverage to the communities of New Westminster, Burnaby, and the Tri-Cities. To learn more about Freshet News, what the plans are for this publication, and how they want to set themselves apart as a nonprofit newsroom, we sat down for a conversation with Cornelia Naylor, a longtime local journalist and co-founder of Freshet News. You know, this is a bit of a long time coming. I know that the Save Our Local News campaign was kind of going on all throughout the summer and resulted due to the closures of three Glacier Media, well, now Lodestar publications, the Burnaby Now, the New Westminster Record, and Tri-City News. Could you give a bit of a timeline of, you know, the layoffs happening, those publications closing, to you sort of banding together with these other journalists that were also part of the same publications and creating Freshet News?
First, I'm so impressed that you've been following this whole thing for as long as it's been going on. I mean, the timeline's been pretty short when you consider what we're trying to do, but yeah, it does feel like a big accomplishment to have launched our website last week. Okay, so timeline. I guess we would say that it starts back in 2023 when Glacier Media, now Lodestar, decided to close our print publications. And then after a couple of years after that, they shut us down completely, saying that for financial reasons, they said. And we think one of those financial reasons is that they left money on the table when they closed the print product. That's why we think that part is significant. So we found out in February that they were going to close us down, and the Burnaby Now shut down. Well, I guess we both did at the end of the Burnaby Now and New Westminster Record, and then the Tri-City News. We were on different collective agreements, so our closure agreements were slightly different, but I think we all shut our doors at the end of April.
At what point after the closure did you decide to band together with some of the other journalists that were part of those publications?
Well, we kind of just were set or reconciled to just kind of going our different ways, I think, and looking for other jobs, that kind of thing. But we were approached, we were thrown a lifeline by a co-op developer who approached us, various social medias and emails that he tried, and eventually we met with that organization, the Union Cooperative Initiative, and they said that they thought this would be an excellent idea or an excellent opportunity to create a co-op model to save local news in these three communities. And so that started shortly after the closures were announced, and then we didn't really start working on it in earnest until we were closed altogether with that organization.
I know throughout the summer you were out and about in the community at different events. What was the engagement process like? You know, what were some of the things you were hearing from people regarding, you know, the pretty distinct lack of local news that was occurring at the time?
Yeah, I would say our first few community events happened after a few weeks, maybe even a month after we shut down entirely. Our websites were gone. There was no more local news flowing. And people were really upset and really happy about the idea of us coming back. What we kept hearing over and over again is that people did not know what was going on in their communities. They didn't, just basic events, which kind of surprised me. I always thought that was kind of just a add-on in our news coverage and stuff, is just events listings. But people wanted that. Even though you can Google that stuff, I guess they wanted it in one place for their community. So that was one thing they missed. And the other thing was City Hall coverage, which I thought was really interesting too, because that at least is one of those things that doesn't really get a lot of clicks online, and it was something that was kind of not exactly that coverage wasn't exactly supported and encouraged from our corporate owner because it didn't generate a lot of clicks online.
Yeah, I mean, I think that ties into another question I had, which was just how is Fresh, you know, as a news cooperative going to differ from the previous publications that you worked for? You know, is there going to be sort of a difference in the kind of stories you tell or the ways that you're telling it? You know, it's less profit driven. So in this case, do you have the time to sort of focus on the more niche hyper-local that may not get as many clicks?
Yeah, when I first started 15 years ago in local news, we were writing good, solid sort of bread and butter local coverage, school board, city hall, the courts, lots of local news features and events, that kind of thing. And it's not that corporate media in the past with their local news outlets hasn't done that. They have done that. It's why people love and appreciate local news, even though they might have taken it for granted over these years. So I'd like us to go back to that kind of careful, you know, on the ground news coverage. And that's kind of what we expect to do, just basic, good local news coverage. The difference, I think, is that had been eroded by the time our newspapers closed. By that time, I was getting a little existentially angsty, and I think maybe my colleagues were too, about just becoming content creators. You know, it's just whatever bakery opening, not that bakery openings are not important, but just real clickbaity stuff that we were expected to just churn out, and lots of it. And I think with four journalists at the helm, because we are the ones making the decisions in this co-op, I think we're going to go back to, you know, we have to sort of slow ourselves down, get off the hamster wheel, and start doing that solid local news coverage again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're excited about that.
Yeah, and I mean, this has proven successful in other places. I remember the Save Our Local News campaign citing it, a similar thing happening in Quebec, and it and proving to be successful. I guess, how did that come about?
Well, yeah, that is kind of a model that we've looked for, at least a success story. So in Quebec, there were 6 daily newspapers, very much local news, but they were dailies. We were just free weekly papers. And they were going to all close because the corporate owner had the same sort of financial difficulties, I guess, that they ran into. So they were going to shut down 6 communities' news outlets. And the Quebec government, there was a big hue and cry. Politicians even got on board, I believe. But then the Quebec government stepped in with a $5 million, I think it was an interest-free loan or something like that, and they created a co-op, the same kind of co-op that we're looking at, a union cooperative, or where the members are union members as well. And it's going. Yeah,
yeah,
it's going now. That the shift to a co-op model saved those 6 papers. Our funding model, what we envision is that it will be advertising. We're looking at some sort of memberships, but we're still deciding what that means, membership or subscription. We don't expect that we will be putting up a paywall or that our paper will be something that you pay for, but maybe delivery to your home, like your front step, might be something that you pay for. Or certain content, certain parts of the content online might be things that we monetize. We're doing fundraising. We're right in the middle of another fundraising campaign. Our first fundraising campaign raised $55,000. So that's going to be important for us to continue campaigning and fundraising, basically. Since launching, we've also launched another fundraiser. And those are people really excited about local news actually flowing. And that was so encouraging for us. That, and we're looking at grants. We're looking at everything we can.
When can we expect the physical newspaper, if there's any news on that?
Oh, right. We haven't even talked about that.
Yeah.
Well, our stretch goal is to have a print product. Right from the get-go, what we talked about was we think that people in the communities want print. We've talked to people in the ad industry, an ad agency, former ad sales people, and when they heard from their clients, their advertisers, they said they, you know, the company expected them to move over to digital advertising, and they didn't. Those advertisers just dropped off. So we think that there are a lot of people out there, especially in the community, that want people in their own community, they're the people that are going to come to their stores that they can advertise in print. Those are the people that are targeted with the paper. So, if we can manage to get enough support, if we can manage to monetize the website like the way that we need to, then hopefully we'll be, our goal is to launch in the spring, to get a print publication out in the spring.
So the last couple questions I wanted to ask were, I guess, more personal ones, looking into the backgrounds of all the journalists involved within Fresh and News. You're someone who's been involved within local journalism for quite a long time, 15 years or so?
And I'm the one who's been in local journalism the shortest time. Between us, we have like 100 years of local news coverage experience. One of my colleagues is, I think both, two of them are, have 30 years of experience in local news. So
yeah.
Actually, I think all of them do, now that I think about it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, like, what keeps you here?
That's an excellent question. It is such a fun job. The variety of it. I mean, as a local journalist, you cover everything. I love animal stories. They're always so weird and quirky. You get to sit down and talk to people in your community, and life is both stranger and more beautiful than fiction when you talk to certain people in the community and you can really get into those stories. You know that the coverage that you're doing of civic institutions like City Hall or the school board or the courts really matters, because nobody else is doing that coverage. They're you know, they swoop in if a story is really interesting, and in the past that's how the bigger outlets have gotten some of their scoops and their stories, is that they follow up on local news reporting, and that's a thing that's eroding and is really important. But on a personal level, I just love it. I love being in the courts. I love the people you get to meet, the dedication to craft, the storytelling itself, the variety. It's never done. You can never do it well enough, but it's always a great challenge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The publications closing earlier in April, do you feel like you were always like acutely aware of the importance of local news, or was it something that like really, it really put it into perspective for you once it was gone, essentially?
Yeah, that's a great question, because when you ask me personally, I've always loved this job. It wasn't like it's, you don't know what you got till it's gone, in terms of my own personal enjoyment of the job. It's but since the papers closed and we've looked into why people are concerned about local news disappearing, and even the fact that it's disappearing at an alarming rate across Canada and North America and possibly the world, but definitely in Canada, has made us more aware of its importance societally. There were a couple of reports written earlier this year, or that came out earlier this year, that really underline that. One of them said that when communities, it's data coming out of the States, that when communities lose their local newspaper, they tend to retreat into more partisan corners. And we've definitely seen that in the States and in Canada more and more. When you lose your local newspaper, people go online and they retreat into their ideological corners and just throw rocks at each other. there's nothing that they can share, like a community news feature that can, at least they're in the same reality, you know, and fact checking, and people that are dedicated, you know, professionals in terms of making sure that the facts that they put out can be trusted, and that we've done the best we can to verify the things that we're saying. Those things are important so that people don't retreat and become more divided. And that to me is a really important concern in democracy today. The other thing was the idea, the other report said that local news is like the bedrock of good journalism, a good journalism ecosystem, and therefore really important for democracy, in for that same reason that I was talking about earlier, that we are on the ground in those communities covering things that other people don't. Those institutions that really affect people, like the bylaws and the decisions coming out of City Hall, what happens in their local schools, what happens, what their police force is doing, what their fire department's doing. We're there giving people the information they need to make informed decisions as informed citizens. And that's just key to democracy. Those are all things, to answer your question, those are all things that have become more and more front of mind for us, or even just we've just realized them more, you know. We didn't realize how important we were. It's crazy to me that now you have a website, our website, and there would have been nothing had we not, you know, established it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to
even
your point. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, I mean, even the Burnaby Beacon recently, I think I had a merger with the Georgia Strait.
That's right.
Like, it seems like a lot of it is either being dealt with in mergers or just straight up closures.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense. Those were the questions I wanted to ask, but I guess the last thing I'd want to ask of you is if there's just any other information regarding Freshet News and the work that all of you are doing that you would like our listeners to know about.
Well, they can sign up for our newsletter. They can visit our website, freshetnews.ca. And what we really want to do with this publication, to answer part of another question that you asked earlier, how do we want to be different? We want to be more engaged in the community. We want to hear more from our readers. We want to be able to have community events or events where readers can come and meet us and we can talk about stuff and different ideas for engagement. We haven't quite nailed all of those down yet, but we do want to hear from you. We want to hear letters. We want news tips. Sign up, subscribe, visit us.
Sounds good. I mean, and for those of you listening, CJSF would also love news tips as well. So if you can send those over to both Freshet News and CJSF.ca, please do. All right. Thank you so much, Cornelia.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Once again, that was our interview with Cornelia Naylor, a local journalist, reporter, and co-founder of the newly launched publication Freshet News, which aims to provide coverage for the areas of Burnaby, New Westminster, and the Tri-Cities. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This has been your hour of talk news content here at CJSF. Coming up right at 11 a.m. is Democracy Now! Before we get into that, we're going to be playing a track from a band that has been topping the charts here at CJSF as of late. This one is Don't Try by Self Care.